It's my pleasure to introduce both Claire and Stacy. Claire is a Claire Smith. Claire served on faculty last year, a long kind of grew up at Holden. Is that a good way to put it?
Yeah.
Long time volunteer, and we just love to have her back. Just finished her MSW and has worked with Stacy Kahata.
Am I Kita?
I knew I was going to say
it. That's why you just left out a middle
name. Kahata. I got it?
Yeah, that was right.
Okay, for a Midwesterner, that's not too bad.
Yeah. You should get a lot of
I have trouble spelling names, pronouncing names, and keeping people straight.
Sometimes not
all of us want to stay
straight. No, I know. We have two faculty members this week that look too much alike for my brain. That's all I'm going to say, but I think I got it now. So good.
So we're looking at the Hansen, Jensen,
end with EN, which is not common either. But that helped me, at least I got the EN and I Stacy is Program Director of Christian Foundation. We're so pleased to have you here. I know you've taught with us before, but it's been a few years.
Right? True. Right.
So very good. So thank you. Take it
away. Thanks, Janice. And we're here with our colleague, Radiette Mulugeta.
Good morning.
Yeah. We'll all introduce ourselves a little bit more.
Thank you, everybody, for coming. So like Sharon said, my name is Claire, and I've been coming up to Holden since I was a little tiny baby, and it's really fun to be here and teaching stuff this year. The Christian Foundation for Global Citizenship is the group that all three of us are associated with, and you can fill in for me, but the mission is to support young adults who are developing service and leadership skills. To transform service experiences into lives of service and leadership. So for me, I did 2 years of Jesuit Volunteer Corps Northwest. 1 year I was in Portland working with survivors of domestic violence and sexual assault from the Latino community. And then the second year I was on a reservation in Montana working as an academic assistant at a school. And throughout that time, the Christa Foundation accompanied me and offered me resources and support. And then after it was all done, kind of brought me into community and said, let's debrief what just happened, what you just were a part of, and how can you take those lessons and those things that might still be sitting uncomfortably or might be difficult and turn that into a life that's more sustainable in service instead of just having it be like a one-year deal. Anything else you want to add?
Yeah, no, that's great. Radiette, why don't you introduce yourself and your role at the Christa Foundation, and then Claire can see we can move then into more.
Absolutely. So my name is Radiette Mulugeta, and I am a 2012 CRISA colleague, so Claire and I are in the same cohort, and I served with an organization called Mission Year, which is an urban service program, faith-based. So I served 2 years in Houston, and then afterwards ended up on staff with them, and so worked with our program with our year-long service volunteers as well. So currently, recently, in February, I stepped in as the program associate for the CRISA Foundation and work with our colleagues that are entering in. We have about 15 to 17 CRISA colleagues that are introduced into our community every year. So I work with them as well.
So there's a little bit about Claire and Stacy on the inside front cover of your handout. So the handout we'll use, and we also have another special handout just for today when we talk about the Bible. So we'll have that one out to you later. But if you find this, you know, reasonably attractive and decide to come tomorrow or the next day, we'll use this handout again. So we invite you to bring it back. So Claire recently took her first job after her master's degree.
Yes, I did.
With an organization that you'll see is actually mentioned here at the bottom as one of the credits, the Kaleidoscope Institute for Leadership in a Diverse Changing World.
What a good
name. Yeah. So it kind of says everything. And she's the Pacific Northwest coordinator, so she's on staff with them.
Right. So I'll be any church congregations or any groups of people that are interested in kind of developing some of these skills, perhaps of having kind of growing leadership and dialogue skills in their congregations between Vancouver, BC, and Portland, Oregon. I'm going to be working with them. And if any of you are interested, for community time.
And including Portland, Oregon.
Including Portland, Oregon.
Yeah. So the Krista Foundation, as both have described, is a young adult leadership development program. And one of the main portions is a intercultural dialogue facilitator apprenticeship program. So Claire has been an apprentice in the facilitator program for the last 2.5 years, right? I would say, even though before it started, so she was really instrumental in our designing it. So now she's actually a staff person in this field. And so this is Claire's being in charge, like she was last year when she also led this session. So we have these three sessions that we're going to do today, Wednesday, and Thursday. They're described. They're also on the inside of the front cover. And today, well, the overarching theme for our three sessions, on the growing edge, building equitable relationships across difference. And that's building on the summer theme, right, about fear not. So what does it mean to be on our growing edge, our learning edge, the edge of, you know, am I comfortable or not? So today we'll focus on You Are Mine, Challenge and Support in Sacred Text. And we'll explore the biblical text that, who was here for worship yesterday? Yeah, you heard a pretty decent sermon.
Yeah.
Around the biblical text, and we'll look at that same text a little bit more today when we get to that portion. Right? So, take it away. Right. We'll start with Claire and Radia.
Let me turn my sound on, see if that works. Okay. Yes? Is it working?
It's sort of.
I'll just keep talking. Okay, great.
You're good.
So, to guide our time together, we offer the first tool or kind of framework that we have, respectful communication guidelines. So a lot of times in these small groups and workshops, we come up with some sort of group norms, group agreements, that sort of thing to guide our time together. And this is what we offer, and it's an acronym. So we get our little RSPECT. So the first, and this is on page 3 in your handouts if you want to follow along or make notes or anything like that. So the first letter, R, stands for take responsibility for what you think and feel without blaming others. This is an opportunity for us to both claim our own experiences and to reduce our amount of judging or blaming other people. And one of the ways to do this is to use I statements. I think, I feel, I notice, I wonder. Every time I talk about this letter, I first think of my relationship with my parents, because this has been a growing edge for me with them for a number of years. But I've really been noticing lately, and we tend to have conversations about everything from like political issues to my life choices. And I've started to notice that if I can take responsibility for the statement by saying like, oh, I'm feeling defensive, or I brought this up and now I'm noticing that you're asking me a lot of really pointed questions, like, do you have an opinion that you'd like to share back to me, instead of, you know, trying to like play devil's advocate or something, the conversation, instead of stopping and becoming kind of this, we're both stuck in our corners, can allow us to go deeper into conversation. And if I notice that when I take responsibility for my feelings, it invites them to also take responsibility for their feelings as well. So R for take responsibility for what you think and feel without blaming others.
And then the next one is E, which is use empathetic listening. And so that is an invitation for us, as we are listening to the people that are speaking, that we're not thinking of our responses, that we're not thinking of what we're going to say next or how to set that up well, but that we're actively listening to the individual, and that we're listening not only the words that are being said, but the feelings behind the words, the emotions as well. So an example that I have for this is oftentimes in my previous role with Mission Year, I worked with a lot of young adults that I was walking alongside as they were experiencing the program for the first time. And so I would have one-on-one conversations with individuals, and a lot of it was to help them move into intentional community with their housemates. And they would share specific stories in that space. And because I went through the program, it was a challenge for me to not be like, well, okay, this is how you should do this, but to really ask questions about, like, I noticed that you, as you're speaking about, like, how you're experiencing this program, that you have, like, it's very hard, or that you're saying these things. Can you share more about that? Where do you think this is coming from? So just leaning into and kind of imagining myself in their shoes as I was going through it for the first time, but not interjecting as well. So E, use empathetic listening.
S stands for be sensitive to differences in communication styles. We here in this room bring many different experiences and many different personalities with us. Some of us might be internal processors who prefer to kind of think things through and then make a statement that you feel confident and sure. Some people figure out what they want to say by talking, and they're excited to hear what kind of arises as they're externally processing something. So the invitation in S, to be sensitive to differences in communication style, is to know your own style and be aware of how that's influencing the group that you're speaking in. To know that silence can mean many different things. For some people, it might mean that they're thinking. For some people, it might mean that they're feeling excluded from a conversation. And to be mindful of your own, and also to be noticing what other people seem to bring into the group, to try and find a balance so that everybody's voices can be heard and valued in an inclusive way. So S, be sensitive to differences in communications style.
And then at the center of respect is ponder, P. So this is an invitation for us to pause and to internally wonder how we are thinking and feeling in terms of what we're hearing, to reflect on that before speaking. So for me, I think a lot of the moments that cause for an invitation for me to ponder are in group settings. When I'm facilitating conversations, there was a time where I was leading a group and facilitating a workshop for my team members, and one of the individuals was actively resisting, like, I don't know why we're participating in this, I don't know why we're having this conversation, and it was in front of my peers, it was in front of his housemates, and made me feel some kind of way about that. And in that moment, pausing was really what saved that conversation for me, to really think about, okay, I feel like I need to take responsibility for this. I feel like it wouldn't be beneficial to the conversation for me to reprimand or to silence, but to really think about how to take responsibility for my emotions in this moment, and then to follow up with a question. But then also sometimes pondering does not mean that I have to immediately respond. So I notice, I wonder, and then I pause, and then I let it be. And then later on, if I feel moved to, I could follow up individually with that person. So P, ponder.
The second E stands for examine your own assumptions and perceptions. So we all come to this space with lenses, and like I said, our own experiences that shape how we interpret anything that is occurring around us in any moment. When I lived in intentional community in Portland, I was working with survivors of domestic violence and sexual assault, and it was emotionally draining work. I was exposed to a lot of really difficult stories, and I had a lot of feelings come up for myself. There was one day when I was driving home from work with one of my housemates, and he asked me how my day was, and I started telling him I just had like a really horrible day with everything seemed to be going wrong. And I was telling him about this, and he didn't ask a follow-up question, he didn't make eye contact with me, he like didn't respond at all, and we'd spent the rest of the drive in silence. And then we got home, and the rest of my housemates asked how my day was, and I told them again and explained and kind of debriefed with them, and I noticed he pulled out his phone and was on his phone while I was talking. And so I assumed that he was being really rude. I perceived that he wasn't listening, that he didn't care, that he was just being a general jerk. And so thankfully, I don't know what exactly prompted me to take responsibility and ponder all these things, but I was able to go ask him a question, just say like, hey, you're not talking when I bring this stuff up, what's going on? And what he said was, well, when I hear you talk about these things, I don't know what the right response is. Like, you're talking about this gender-based violence. I've never been exposed to this sort of thing before. I, like, don't want to say the wrong thing and piss you off. I don't want to hurt your feelings, but I, like, don't know what to say. And I was like, oh, I thought that you just didn't care. And so he had a lot of work to do, and I had some work to do to try and, you know, kind of build this relationship further. But if I hadn't examined my own assumptions, I might have just written them off for the rest of the year as somebody I couldn't even approach at all. So that's one of the invitations for E, examine your own assumptions and perceptions.
And then C, keep confidentiality constructively. So this is different from keeping secrets. Secrets kind of alludes to power dynamics, but this is more so how do we intend to uphold the well-being of our community, the community that we are creating in this space, but also the communities that we come from. So one of the things that I reflect consistently on is sitting in a staff meeting where we are actively moving towards intentional community and inclusive community. And because we are a diverse community, we had a conversation around our values and shifting our values and our commitment of justice and racial justice. And we had a situation where different people in the space would share their stories and where they're coming from, and then others in that room would kind of push against that based off of their lived experiences, and it was a lot of heavy conversation, and it was really hard. And in that space, we all agreed that this is stuff that stays in this room. But also, we followed up one-on-one with one another. So it is intended to stay in the room, it stays in the room. And that commitment allowed us to dive deeper together as well. So keep confidentiality constructively.
And finally, T, for trust ambiguity. We are not here to debate who is right and who is wrong. There are times for debate, but this is a dialogue. This is a space where we are noticing that we come from a lot of different experiences and we bring many different differences, and that in those different understandings and different ways of seeing the world, there's actually a great richness, and there's an opportunity to find a deeper truth rather than arguing about a kind of specific truth, like a definition or the right approach to something. If you think about the Bible, think about the Gospels, there are four stories that are telling the same story but in different ways, and some tell the same instance and from a different perspective. Some tell one thing and the other gospel completely leaves out that moment, and that in that complexity we find a lot of richness to continue a process of getting closer to God and getting closer to each other. So in this space we ask that we can trust ambiguity as we have these conversations.
So before we move forward, if we can agree to uphold these guidelines during our time together, if you're able to give me a thumbs up.
Woohoo! And then just as a quick moment, if you can take a look at your sheet, and maybe one of these feels really natural to you. You're like, oh, I got this one. It's not going to be a problem. And maybe one of them you're like, ooh, that one's always a little bit hard for me. If you could just take a moment, maybe make a note to yourself, just set a little intention as we go into this time, so that you can kind of know how you're approaching this conversation together. I'll give you just a few seconds. Are there any questions at this point? Okay. Then we're going to move into the next framework or tool that we have to offer together. This is called mutual invitation. And mutual invitation is a way of sharing in small groups. That tries to balance out power dynamics in a group and kind of allow space for us to do all these respectful communication guidelines of listening empathetically and being present in the moment and pondering. So the way it goes, it's a tool for sharing small groups. We will delegate someone to share first. There'll be a prompt, a question, something like that. That person can share, and then when they're done, they invite somebody across the circle to share, to respond to the prompt as well. That person then has three options. They can share, they can pass, or they can pass for now. And then if they pass for now, everyone will remember that they said that, and then at the end, after everyone has been invited, we'll return to them and say, I remember you passed for now, would you like to share now? And then they get to choose. Whichever one of these three options that you take, that person then gets to invite the next person. So everyone is still involved in shaping the conversation, whether they answer the prompt or not. And part of this, too, is in order to listen deeply and intentionally, we ask for no crosstalk. So if someone says something interesting and you, like, have a question or you want, like, oh, I have that same experience, hold it, wait until everyone has been invited, and then if there's extra time, that's the opportunity for clarifying questions or connections to be made. Okay? Are there any questions? We're going to give a little demonstration. Okay.
It's going to be so good to practice.
I find myself craving it now that we've been doing this for a while. It's like, oh, can we just use mutual invitation? So if you can come up here.
Yeah.
And can we get maybe one more volunteer? Great. What's your name? So we are here. Huh? Okay, so we're here in our kind of
circle.
And I've been designated to share first, and the prompt is, what is your favorite movie? Okay? So, my favorite movie is, well, because we watched it, Black Panther. ready yet? I invite you to share.
I'm going to pass for now. Stacey, would you like to share?
Oh, thank you. Okay.
It doesn't have to be true.
I know. I was going to say, The Sound of Music. It was the first movie that came to my mind. How about you?
I'd like to pass.
Who would you invite?
I'd like to invite...
Favorite movie? Trolls. Great. Never seen it.
Appreciate it. Ready yet? I remember you passed for now. Would you like to share now?
Thank you. Yeah, my favorite movie is... Black Panther 2. The one that hasn't come out yet.
Oh,
we're waiting for it.
Not also, too. Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you.
So one thing that's not up here that that we did in this group is we also used invitational language. We didn't just point to somebody, right? Like, that's part of making it a welcoming space. So even if you don't know their name, maybe you can just, like, introduce yourselves before. Or you can just, I invite you gently.
Can we take a minute to introduce ourselves around?
Okay, let's do that.
Because we're going to be doing a couple different things in this small group. So it'd be
great
to know each other.
Okay, so let's take just a minute to share your names and just check in, and then we'll do it.
Within the group?
So you're going to get a chance to practice names again, because we're going to be using the respectful...
You can write them down. It's not cheating.
No, it's totally fine. Use your research. So in these small groups that we have... We're going to practice both the respectful communication guidelines that Redia and I just shared and this process of mutual invitation using the information that you wrote on these sticky notes when you came in. If you didn't have a chance to do that, that's okay. The opportunities are to share your name, to share a place that you call home, or places, it doesn't have to be just one, and then to fill in this prompt, what I feel brave when. Okay? So I'm going to come join this back group, and then Redyette, you'll start, and Stacey, you'll start modeling for sharing. And we have 10 minutes to do this. So do be mindful of how many people are in your group, and try and make sure that everybody has a chance to be invited. How was that? How was that process for you? What did you notice or wonder as we did that activity?
It was tricky to remember to invite somebody when you were done, because I think we get so self... I get so self.
Yeah.
That then we're remembering.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
I haven't heard anything
yet. Yeah. Hard sometimes to remember to extend the invitation. Yeah.
I would also say we're talking among people we may not know or know very well, so it's risky to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Definitely. There's some vulnerability required to share. Anything else? Yeah.
I noticed that, or I was interested in the fact that home is, for some people, not always a physical place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, home is very open to interpretation in a lot of ways.
So I think our leader expanded the description or the definition of home, which gave permission for everyone else to do that.
So the person who spoke first kind of framed the way that everybody else thought of the things too.
Cool.
Anybody else? Noticings, wonderings.
How about around the process? Some of you mentioned about the process. Do you have some thoughts about that?
Did anybody find it
to be in Morse code?
Seems to be very democratic.
Very democratic.
Yeah.
Kind of everybody gets equal opportunity.
Yes.
Sure.
I think initially the process can kind of interfere with your ability to do the emotional work. Does that make sense? Because you want to get it right.
You're thinking about, okay, should I can pass, and then I have to invite somebody, so it's kind of, yeah.
I'm sure it just takes some practice.
Sure.
How did you share in your group when you introduced yourselves? When you gave your names?
How did that
Did you go around a circle?
The first time before we did that.
Yeah, when you said.
Oh.
Yeah, so we're accustomed to doing that, right? And going around in a circle. And oftentimes, I've been in groups where the very externally processing, extroverted person says, oh, I'll start. And then that person is the starter, and then we go around. And so I know that when I'm the person sitting next to the starter, not in the second place, and I'll be thinking that whole time about what I'm going to say. And then mutual imitation is a way that helps me to listen more attentively than to sit there the whole time thinking about what I'm going to say. So because we're focusing on what's it like to be in a really diverse community, to build relationships across difference, it's to help us to focus as much on listening to what someone else has to say as we spend paying attention and preparing what we're going to say, right? So that's one of the reasons. That's why when Claire mentioned at the beginning, it changes the power dynamic. It means that those persons who process externally don't have that burden of always feeling like, oh, I guess I have to say something because I'm here in a group of people who are, you know, less willing to do that. We have a colleague who is very extroverted. She's like the life of the party kind of gal. And so she says, I like mutual invitation because I don't have to be that person. It invites me to try out a different way of being, to get in touch more with my feelings.
Any last thoughts or questions?
I just have thought about whenever I'm in a group where I have to introduce myself.
Yeah.
I have an unusual name, and people always go, what? ever since I've been a little kid, I thought, why didn't my parents give me an easy name to pronounce and spell? And so I always have a sense of discomfort
in introducing
myself. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. At all these years, I still do. Mm-hmm.
Thanks for saying that, Deneen. So, well, that's one of the things, too, is that the reason we did this process was so that people can say, what was her name again? And then they'll go up and see.
Yeah, right. So you're going to be represented on these walls throughout the week.
Yeah. Do you want to say something about that?
Yeah, so this is a process we call conocimientos, which is a Spanish word. Does anybody know what it means?
Say the word again.
Conocimientos. Comes from the verb conocer,
to know.
And it's to know not as a fact, right, but to know as, you know, a person or a place, something that's a little bit kind of more embodied knowing. And so this process, you have represented yourselves according to how you want to be seen and known in this space. And in addition to sharing verbally, this is a way for us to also share visually.
So we're here to talk about dialogue, right? And so this is a dialogue process as well.
Yeah.
So it's a way for those of us who need more time to ponder, to actually think about that. So, you know, if we just pounced on you, when do you feel brave? Right? It was kind of like, what's your favorite movie? Could you tell I was like, oh, I need to think about this. I wasn't ready for that question.
I didn't prep you.
I know, like, oh, I was ready to say my ice cream, or what do I like about Holden? I don't know. I actually was thinking, oh, like, what's the question? No. So it's a way to do that, and in a group of strangers, like, all of us are strangers to each other. Well, mostly. I think there's two people in there. Couples like that. But this is also a way for you to know something more about yourself. To conocer about yourself, right? Have a conocimientos about yourself. So, yes, I was the one who said, well, I feel at home in California. That's not where I live, but that's where I'm from originally. And there's something about it that's familiar that reminds me of who I am. And so that's what conocimientos is about, is for us to reflect on who we are as well.
Another framework that we have as we're bringing this is this transformational learning and intercultural development Venn diagram. So essentially, as we're having these conversations, we recognize that there are different ways of approaching knowledge and of learning and of being in the world. And so one of these we call heartset. Another one we name here mindset. Another one we name skillset. So the heartset has to do with the attitude of how you approach something. has to do with coming with an attitude of curiosity, of being flexible, of trusting ambiguity, right? And some people who might be more guided by stories and feelings, this might be the way that you approach things more often. Mindset is a little more of like the theories, kind of the intellectual approaches. Maybe you would want to know some facts. Maybe you'd want to have some like diagrams like this to look at and organize things. In terms of intercultural development, this would be an awareness, a self-awareness of being able to name kind of what your own culture is, of being able to name kind of different components of other cultures or places where differences might tend to exist, and being able to analyze power dynamics or being able to analyze things as they're happening. And then skill set is the ability to actually do things. It's the hand. So if you talk also about like heart, head, and hands, skill set is the ability to build relationships, to practice empathy, to kind of walk the talk of these sorts of things, to adapt your behavior, to be more inclusive and welcoming in a multicultural setting. And so often we have one of these which is kind of more intuitive or more natural or more developed that we have tended to rely on. So take a moment, maybe you already know instinctively, like, I know it's mindset for me, like, that's where I go to first. I want to, like, get the theories and the frameworks in my head. And then for me, having to practice an attitude of curiosity and a heart set and being able to be open to vulnerability and feelings in new groups, in new spaces, is more of a challenge for me. So as we're here together, we want to also recognize that we're coming with different awarenesses of this, and the intention is to build them all so they can support each other, right?
So who was in the Bible study this morning? A couple of people? Oh, good, a couple of people in each group. So one of the things that I really appreciated about what he said at the end was he said, I and other people like myself have really invested ourselves in the mindset approach to the scripture, right? Mm-hmm. To learning what the words are, what they mean, what the history is, and all that. The same thing about culture. We may know a lot of things about culture, about our culture, and have some self-awareness of that. And what did he say? He said, I have committed to make sure that a big portion of the time here is about a spiritual practice related to the scripture, right? And here he's trying to get at both of these things. The heart set, the curiosity, the exploration, right? That's what cognitive flexibility means. It means open-mindedness, trusting ambiguity. We don't know, right? And then that skill set. He had us write. He gave us a writing prompt and said, write something about yourself for 10 minutes, right? And so this is a skill set. Right? I don't know if some of you who were there might have just said, oh, I could wait out 10 minutes. If my spouse gave me back my pen, you know, because I loaned him a pen, and he says, here. I'm like, it's just like 3 minutes. Hold on to the pen. You might think of something else. So he's like, and you write, did one, a dutiful sentence or something. But anyway, I mean, part of it is that especially relationships, conversation, dialogue across difference, it's practicing because it's a skill set. That's the hard part. We have great ideas in our minds, but how do we actually have a conversation? And what do we do after the first sentence, right? When somebody says something back and we're like, oh, right? And we have some feelings. Well, how do I manage that? How do I practice empathy? And this piece about how do I fashion adaptive behavior? How do I manage myself? How do I engage in constructive ways? Yeah.
Oh, I forgot I did this.
It's okay. There they are.
Again.
Yeah. So do you have a culture one too? Okay. So at the bottom of the page, it says culture is. Yeah? So we'll do this all together. What would you say are parts of what is culture? Because we're talking about this as intercultural dialogue skills. So what is culture?
It's the experiences and habits.
Experiences? Habits? Yeah.
What else?
Food? Okay, which is part of experiences and habits, yeah.
Mores?
Values?
Modes of interaction.
Modes of interaction. What is an appropriate way of interacting or being in relationship?
Customs.
customs. So practices that are patterned over and over. Do you have a pen over there with that next to that paper? It's going to say it.
Yeah.
You can go through here. There's some
practices.
Okay. Anyone else? Anything else?
So it's inherited.
Okay, great. Gail.
Inherited.
So it's passed down or it's passed across, right? Okay. So inherited, mores or values.
Stories.
Stories, food. What was the first thing that you said?
Habits and experiences.
Habits and experiences. Yeah, and then something else came from this room. Anything else?
Ways of interacting.
Ways of interacting. That was right. That's what you said. Okay.
It's often unspoken.
Great. That's what we're going to do tomorrow. Exactly. It's often unspoken. So here's an official, if you will, but this is a working definition of culture. It's not only the food you eat and the way you dress, the music you listen to, those kinds of things, but it's the values connected to those. It's like, what is an appropriate interaction? Right? What's the appropriate way to conduct yourself in worship? Is it loud and boisterous? You know, here, it's a little bit more subdued, right? Why is that? That's connected to our very Lutheran roots of this retreat place, which is very connected to very Scandinavian Lutheran roots, right? Not that German Lutherans would be more boisterous, but African-American Lutherans, you know, where the church, the largest, fastest-growing church in the world, right, would be a little more boisterous, I would say, in worship. Although I listened to a little boy walking out, and he said to his mom, I took it, was his mom, like, wow, that's way different from... So it was super boisterous for him, and he had an awesome experience in worship, so that's great. Yeah.
I think something else, too, which is very subtle, is common assumptions that we don't even know.
Common assumptions, right, like he was saying, that are unspoken. So here's the definition. Culture is the learned and patterned values, beliefs, and practices, right? Values, beliefs, and practices of a group of interacting people. So the last kind of weird part is because your family has a group, has a culture. Holden has a culture, right? But even though it has Lutheran roots, maybe this little boy's roots are also Lutheran back wherever home is for him, but has different kinds of ways of expressing it, right? So these interacting people here, I think it was you, Nancy, who said you feel at home here at Holden too, right? So how is it we can feel at home and we can feel at home here? Because there's some things that we are part of that interacting group of people that shares beliefs, values, and practices that are both learned and patterned. So learned, like taught, this is how you act, but also just patterned, right? So maybe my spouse and I are sitting in worship there being a little more vocal and like, oh, people are not saying amen. People are very quiet. All right, so maybe we'll just be a little quieter. We won't give it up, but
no,
we'll be
that.
Quiet. We aren't going to stand up and wave our arms around. Okay, that's not really our experience either. But right, if that is your somebody's experience, like you see the pattern, you're like, okay, maybe that would be a little shocking here. Maybe it'll have to really be inspiring for me to do that. Anyway, so this is these are the principles that we're going to be working out over the next three sessions, or the next two sessions too, that we do, and that all of these are the practices and the skills. Now you've had respectful communication guidelines, so having common understanding, mutual invitation, a way of changing that dynamic, conocimientos as a practice, all of these to help us to be safe and to create this home and to be brave. Right? So that was the question about what helps you to feel brave. When do you feel brave? So it might be killing snakes. Like Linda, ask her about that. She's an expert. But it means doing something. You're like, wow, I did that. Right? And then a sense of achievement. So what is it that helps us as a group of very different people, even if we have many similarities, to be both safe and brave in these dialogue classes? Okay. So, ready? Are we doing this?
Ready.
Okay. So, we'll do the some reflection on the biblical text. So you could set that. Oh, so you do have this little picture in there on your last page, on the back page, because that's our framework of understanding and how we're coming with you. Do you all have a picture for some slides too, or no?
Nope.
Okay.
But I can.
Yeah, for tomorrow.
No problem.
But so this is like, we've just laid out kind of our, not kind of, it is our pedagogical approach, our learning approach, right? That we want to give you accessible skills so that you're eager to learn, so that you want to practice being brave. And because if it's boring and dull, you're just like, I got this, I don't need to know. If it's too hard and scary, right? You're like, whoa, I'm going to go early to lunch, right? So either way, and so we want to help you to be in that zone so that you don't have to go out from this room and find the person who has the most different political values and the most, right, distinct perspective on religion from yourself and say, hey, let's have a dialogue. I just learned three skills, right? No, you don't have to go there and go as far as possible. But, you know, you can begin a conversation and stay deeper in a conversation.
Right.
Great. Do you want to walk through this part? And then
I could walk through the second part of it?
Yeah.
Okay. The process?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. So we already did the respectful communication guidelines, but we'll be reading a text three times together in our small groups in an intention to kind of go deeper and deeper. Some of you might know this process of Lectio Divina. This is similar, related to that. In our groups, we're going to be reading this three times. And then every time we're going to be responding to it in a new way using mutual imitation. So the first time will be, as you're listening to it, the prompt will be, what word, phrase, or image stands out for you? After you finish reading, we'll use mutual invitation to share without elaboration. So you'll simply state what that image, phrase, or word is for you. And then we'll read the text again. This time, paying attention to what this text says to us about the challenges and promises of being God's people. We'll again use mutual invitation to share. And then read it a third time, noticing what we are invited to do, change, or be by this text. Okay? We'll have about 20 minutes for the process.
Mm-hmm.
We have a little bit of cushion, which is great.
Yeah, which is great. So we'll do the Bible study in our small groups. Then we'll probably end maybe a little bit different times, and we'll have so like maybe a three-minute little break there. And then we'll come back, and we'll notice and wonder. We'll hear from each of the groups what you learned out of that process. Okay, and the facilitator, as you see, we all have a facilitator, and they'll start, and if each group would have two volunteers, actually it could be three volunteers to read the text. So, how was that? Sound like, take a deep breath. Was rich and amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Ours was.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you have your clicker. We have a slide that just—it's going to say, "What do you notice? What do you want?"
Our favorite question.
So, for yourself, think about that first. Like, what that process of listening to a text three times, listening to the same text, listening to the voices and the reflections of the people who until this day you had never even met. What did you notice about this text coming alive for you in that context?
Mm-hmm.
This is a time when you get to exercise your...
So many different things people pulled out of this one text. You know, from the beginning to the end, to the middle,
yeah.
You know, people were caught by
So what did you think about that? What did you notice about yourself? Yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, when others would see something, I'd say, oh yeah, that's, I was kind of thinking about that, or I didn't see that, but now I understand.
Yeah.
You know, so it was fun to kind of hear what other people were being caught by and taking that into my own thinking.
Yeah, that's good. Here? Yeah, Philip.
of people seem to be relating to like what is speaking to them, and I think connect with their own lives, like not necessarily just like attending to the point, pick up this word, and like, I think it means this.
Oh yeah, kind of detached, separate from the
yourself.
Yeah,
a little bit, but I noticed that people seem to be really like, this is what I'm struggling with.
Yeah, applying it to
them. Sharing that.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah,
it felt nice to have people being that open and vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anything from this group?
I really appreciated the process.
The process?
Mm-hmm. And I thought it sort of took Alexia to be in it.
Yeah, to make it a community process.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Lectio Divina is often internal, personal, private, devotional practice of looking at a text three times, and this way it enriches it, it makes it a community practice. So this was today's discipline and practice, is to look at the Bible. It could be a biblical text, a scripture text like this. It could be from another tradition's scripture. It could be the preamble to the Constitution. Claire and I have been in a group where we did that. And look at that and, you know, unpacked it a little bit. So depending on the kind of group you're in, here we're in a group of people who share this biblical text, right? So it could be whatever text your group of people might share. So it may be a women's circle, but it could be a civic group or your own mission statement in a community organization that you're part of, to get a little deeper. But the reason, like Philip notes, that we're able to go to a place is because we had all these other practices before, right? We shared a little bit about ourselves with the conocimientos. We claimed together some guidelines and ground rules for our communication. We committed to a practice of mutually sharing, so we could choose our level of vulnerability. And I appreciate, too, that in our group as well, we had some deep and thoughtful contributions from people's hearts. So, any other last things or any other questions that you might have, wonderings that you would have leaving from this bit of our workshop? Well, each group has these evaluation sheets, so you're welcome to please fill it out. And there's a red box on the table in the back. You can leave them as you depart. We have three different titles back there that are resources that we use, either that are directly... Yeah, if you need a pen, Claire's got some too. You can use that one. That's good. Use that, Nancy. And so if you want to take a look at those as you leave, somebody asked, well, you took off your jacket, right? It was you, asked about the Atlantic. So it's not even that specific edition, or what's it called? Volume? No.
I don't want to say episode, but that's
true. Episode, I know. Like, what's the word?
Issue.
It is issue. Okay. Month. That month. But it's an encouragement to say you can notice where there are intercultural situations happening, not only in a specialized book related to that, but also in these other topics, in these other forums, in the newspaper, in a magazine, in a periodical, in a work of fiction. Yeah? And those are places in your book club where you can have a conversation and bring in a little bit more depth around what's happening here. What are the assumptions and the perceptions that we bring to this text, right? So thank you for creating a culture of this group here. See you on Wednesday, where we'll go the next step and go a little bit deeper, literally.